There are few things as lovely as springtime in the woods when wildflowers are in bloom. And you can recreate that landscape in a small way in your own yard. Today, we'll find out how. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. This hour, Virginia bluebells, shooting stars, woodland phlox, and other spring-blooming perennials. We'll talk about both native and non-native flowers. Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, will be here along with Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, and they will answer questions about the plants in your life. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. In just a few weeks, flowers will be blooming all over Iowa. And this hour, we're going to talk about how to bring some of your favorite blossoms, both native and non-native, into your yard. Erin Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, is here. Hello, Erin.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
I'm happy to be here.
And Richard Giron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension, is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning. It may be sooner than you think.
I know.
Well, I spent a little bit of spring break down in Missouri, and already wildflowers are blooming in the woods there. So they are creeping this way for sure. Well, let's start with talking about wildflowers, the native flowers that are so beautiful in the woods in the spring. And of course, so much fun to see, but they can be a little bit tricky to bring into your yard, can't they?
Yeah, they can be. One of the challenges is a lot of those, especially the woodland spring early spring bloomers, are ephemeral. So they come up in the spring early, and then most of the time they're gone completely from the garden, dormant by mid to even sometimes early summer. And so you're left with a space in your garden if those plants were taking up a lot of space. And that can be hard to work with in the garden. I think a lot of times you can, because a lot of these plants, while they like a fair amount of light, they bloom and grow so early in the season, most of the deciduous trees haven't leafed out yet. So you can put them in a shade garden, and because they go dormant so early in the season, they're not negatively impacted by that to a great extent. And you can then use things like hosta to help fill in some of the spaces, because hosta will come up, and by the time they get really big, those things like the Virginia bluebells and the fringed bleeding heart, well, that doesn't go dormant really, but trillium or whatever is covered up. That space is covered up. You can also overplant with annuals. Tuck in a coleus or some other plant to help fill in that gap. But those gaps that they create can be really hard to work with.
Well, and I think one of the other things that's challenging is, of course, when you see wildflowers in bloom in the woods, and bluebells are my very favorite flower of all time. When you see them in the woods, they just carpet the woods, you know, and they're so amazing. But of course, they've had decades or longer to do that. When you try to plant them in your own yard, it takes a long time to get them to really spread like that.
It can. You know, what's interesting is a lot of these plants, they seem to start out really small. It takes them a little bit to get legs. But then once they get established, usually 3 or 4 years, then all of a sudden you'll walk out in your garden and you'll go, oh my gosh, I have bluebells everywhere out here. It's kind of like a multiple factor when you get to that. So the first couple of years are tough. But, you know, a lot of our bulbs are like that too. The first couple of years, they look kind of lonely. And then all of a sudden you realize you have a nice little clump of crocus or squill or snowdrop. It's just kind of the way they kind of establish in your garden.
Now, I think that it's easier to buy wildflowers than it used to be. But if you do want to plant wildflowers in your yard, what's the best method?
Well, you know, some of these come a lot of times you end up finding a mail order, and a lot of times they'll come bare root when you get them through mail order. And so, and typically, I mean, I don't know, Richard, if you would do this in the spring, you could. Some of them have nice big fleshy roots you could plant in the fall. I think finding them is usually the hardest part.
And do you have any suggestions for good ways to find them?
Now, I would say with some of these wildflowers, you can actually find them at a garden center.
Mm-hmm.
They have basically figured out how to propagate them. And so if you go to a garden center, you'll see Virginia bluebells. You will see bloodroot. You will see some of these that are actually
wild ginger.
Wild ginger.
Mm-hmm.
And they're readily available. So once you find them, then you have to know what they like as far as a site. Do they like kind of a moist site, a dry site, partial shade, heavy shade? And once you have that, once you kind of know where they need to go, if you provide that site, then they'll come back for many, many years.
Yeah.
With the different kinds of flowers, I mean, let's talk about some of the different ones. We've talked about Virginia bluebells. Is there anything special that people should know about those?
I think they're very easy to grow. Basically, they need partial shade and a moist, well-drained soil. If they have that, they're very content. They self-seed quite freely. And in my case, my patch is getting bigger and bigger every year because they do spread very nicely.
Do they spread by seed or do they spread by the root?
By seed. They have an amazingly large root system, but they reseed very freely. So they come up. They flower typically early to mid-April, and then they produce the seed, and then they die back typically around mid-June. So they do things very quickly, but they produce a lot of seed, and when you're kind of cleaning up debris, you kind of move around the seed a little bit, so you kind of help it.
And so after they stop blooming, do you want to make sure to leave all of that in place so that the seed can spread if that's what you want?
Yeah, I typically clean it up once the plant debris has turned totally brown. And so if they're still, you know, they're still basically dying, they're probably dispersing that seed. But once they're totally dead, you can probably remove them.
All right. And how long have you had your patch, Richard?
I would say 10 to 15 years.
Okay. So when you say they're pretty easy to grow and it's getting to be a big patch, that's still quite a bit of time.
Right. But I started out with just a few plants and they have spread to large areas in the backyard, even in the yard. I will typically mow around them in the yard, but I'm very tolerant of those plants. So,
all right. How about some other wildflowers? You mentioned Trillium earlier, which can be such a treat to see.
Those are fun.
How can you bring those into your yard?
You know, again, you're probably going to have to find those mail order. And when you order them online, they're going to send them to you at a good time to get them into the ground. And, you know, Trillium is one of those, you know, it's not as easy as Virginia bluebell. But again, as long as you get it in an appropriate spot, which for Trillium is going to be that kind of woodland setting where it's that nice, organic, moist soil, partial shade. It's going to be happy. It'll take a little while to get established, but just like the rest of this stuff, once it gets going, you'll be surprised at what it can do in the yard. As long as you're not putting it in full sun or you got it in a really sharp drainage or soil that's really poorly drained, that stays wet too long. If you get that nice, you know, the kind of soil you would expect to find walking through the woods, and most shade gardens have those situations, then they'll be pretty happy.
Now, I have a naturally wooded backyard, but mm-hmm. it's mostly full of walnut trees. Does that make it trickier to plant wildflowers?
I don't think it does in that the walnut tree does produce a chemical that may inhibit the growth of some plants, but most shade-tolerant plants are usually not affected. Mm-hmm. So I would still try your Virginia bluebells, woodland phlox, Dutchman's breeches, that type of thing, and see how they do. My guess will be they'll be okay.
Now, I think a lot of us go out in the spring and we see these flowers in bloom and think, oh, I want those in my yard, which is probably the worst time to have that thought. When do we need to make a plan for getting them into our yard?
Well, if you can find them in a pot, you can plant those almost any time during the growing season. So obviously spring would be a good time for many of these. Some of these do die back by early summer, but some like woodland phlox that is basically persistent throughout the year. So if you can find that, you can plant it almost any time during the growing season.
All right. And if you buy something at the garden center that's in bloom, does it transplant as well as something that would be pre-bloom?
Not really. Not really. It just depends upon the vigor of that plant. And if you do a good job of removing it and putting it in the ground, there should be very little transplant stress. So it should be fine. They should be fine.
Well, let's talk about some of the non-native flowers that are so beautiful in springtime as well. And you already mentioned Bleeding Heart. What are some of your other favorites, Aaron?
Yeah, I really like Brunnera and Lungwort. So these are two plants that also have very nice ornamental foliage. So they send up flowers in the spring. Heartleaf Brunnera, another name for that is perennial forget-me-not because it has these little blue flowers on it really early in the season, has these nice heart-shaped leaves the rest of the year, kind of resembles the growth pattern of a hosta, but has a slightly different look to it, likes the shade. Lungwort is the same story. And the other nice thing about these plants is, unlike hosta, both Brunnera and Lungwort are not at the top of a deer's preferred list. So they're a little less they're actually a lot less likely to be browsed on than, say, a hosta if you have deer pressure, which is kind of nice.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned the foliage here. These are not plants that die off and disappear like the wildflowers.
No, they're there all season. And many of these have cultivars. You know, Brunnera has a really nice, relatively easy to find cultivar called Jack Frost. Has this wonderful silver coloration on the leaf. It really looks great in a shade garden. Lungwort has spots and blotches of silvers and pinks and creams and all sorts of different colors that really make it a really nice addition year-round. So you have the wonderful flowers early in the season and then this really nice foliage the rest of the year.
All right, and you mentioned a shade garden. Are there favorite spring blooming perennials that want the sun?
Want the sun, yeah. There are a few. I like, there's a lot of the violets will tolerate sun fairly well, so you could always go that route. Pig Squeak is another fun one. This is a big, broad, evergreen leaf, or nearly evergreen leaf that's really thick. It's so thick that you can rub your fingers on it and make it kind of make a squeak sound. It blooms early in the spring, but those nice big dark green leaves are really interesting most of the season. I like, moss phlox is another one that does fairly well in bright locations too. I have a love-hate relationship with moss phlox. It looks great when it's in bloom, but when it's not in bloom, it's just this pile of kind of dark green needles. And like Richard said, his at home is always, you're always pulling grass out of it, which is kind of hard to do. Mine I have on a rock wall, so they really like that. I don't have as much issue with the grass because of that, which is nice. But that's another one that will tolerate full sun.
All right, and it's nice to have something that will grow on a rock wall.
Oh, yeah.
As well. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We've been talking about spring blooming perennials, but of course, you can join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants in your life. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens, and Richard Duran, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Duran of Iowa State University Extension and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And they are here to answer your questions. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also call 866-780-9100. And first up, Ralph is on the line in Poweshiek County. Hi, Ralph.
Nice sunny day. A few years ago, I was out and down to a man. I was walking on the nature trail early in the spring, and the Dutchman's breeches was out, and the butterflies were just in swarms because there wasn't anything else to eat. What's a good plant to plant so that the early pollinators can have something to have for an early breakfast, if you want to call it that?
Well, actually, some of the trees are good. For example, you don't really think about it, but the red maple and the silver maple, they're blooming right now. The flowers are not very showy, but it does attract the pollinators. So some of the trees are actually pretty good for that.
All right. And I've seen a lot of pollinators enjoying creeping Charlie early in the spring.
Yeah,
not something
right.
You necessarily want to plant.
Right.
But
you know, the other one I see a lot of that pollinators enjoy is Siberian squill. And that comes up relatively early and is very attractive to bees and other pollinators.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Ralph. And next up, we've got Rick on the line in Liberty, Missouri. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I had a quick question about ground cover. I like letting my yard go in the back. I would love to do it in the front, too, but the city will sue me. But Pennsylvania pigweed, I think, is what it's called, that has overtaken most of my backyard. And if I just leave it, it'll grow to like a foot to a foot and a half in height. But when the city comes after me, I mow it down and it still survives and comes back. The result is I cut my yard maybe three times a year. That's it. And I hate cutting grass. And my question is it a native? Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Now, I'm not sure on that. You called it Pennsylvania pigweed?
Pennsylvania pigweed. It's a loose kind of a ground cover, and it'll be anywhere from about 4 inches to a foot and a half in height, green leaves, and then it has little tiny pink flowers, very tiny little pink flowers.
I wonder if that's not a type of amaranth that we're thinking.
Amaranth? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
This is not a common name we're very familiar with, but there is a weed I think that fits into that category that is an amaranth.
Or is it a smart weed? I guess I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. My other question is, I'm trying to push this with the city to say if you have ground cover in your yard, the water goes through to the aquifer. When you have a dense grass, once it fills up, then it becomes stormwater runoff, and they have a nightmare of a problem with stormwater runoff in the city that I live in. And do you know if there's any movements towards people letting their yards become ground cover for the benefit of the city drainage systems?
Well, I think grass actually does a very good job of holding the moisture and letting it soak in. You get most of your runoff where you have bare ground or very, very hard ground. So I think in that regard, grass does a very good job. Obviously, you don't have to grow grass. You have the choice of ground covers. There are many ground covers that you can grow in either sun or shade. But I think grass does a very good job of holding the moisture.
Well, there definitely is a movement toward planting rain gardens. We've had
sure.
a lot of education
that
about that over the years, and that does absorb significantly more water than a lawn. For someone like Rick, who obviously hates to mow, do you have some advice for what he can do with his lawn that will keep the city from complaining, keep the neighbors
yeah.
from complaining, but also keep him from having to mow?
I think really the making it a bit more managed would probably go a long way. So rather than letting the opportunistic weeds be the thing that come up in the yard, is being a bit more proactive and planting some things that really are intended to be tall and not mowed, not necessarily establishing a prairie, but something more along those lines. Anything you can show anybody, whether it's your neighbors or somebody else, that you are actually managing this in some way, because that's really typically what municipalities are worried about, is that it's just simply not being managed. And most people, the only cue they have for that is the presence of what everybody would classify as a weed. So if you can be more deliberate about what you're allowing to grow and still get the same benefits that you're trying to get, you probably the neighbors would probably be a bit more friendly.
All right. So it's going to take some elbow grease on the front end, but you can come up with a landscape that's fairly maintenance-free, you feel?
Oh, not maintenance-free.
No, none of it's going to be maintenance-free.
Low maintenance. Let's say low maintenance.
Yeah. It's certainly less than mowing every week, potentially, but the front end of it is going to be more work. Once you get it established, it's that way. But a lawn is that way, too, and so is any other garden space. So there is going to be some work ahead of time, but once it is established, it's going to be less work than mowing once a week for sure. It'll be different work. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
All right. Here's a comment from Katie in Wabik, and I'd love to get your response to this, because I think that she's talking about something that a lot of people are tempted to do or do. She says, be careful when transplanting wildflowers from the woods. She transplanted a purple flower, and it turned out to be Creeping Charlie. So that wasn't a very good bargain. But obviously, a lot of natural areas, they don't want you to transplant their wildflowers.
Right.
In fact, that's not even legal.
Allowed.
Is it? Right.
Okay. But, like I said, the plant propagators have figured out how to propagate many of these wildflowers. So you can definitely go out and you can buy Virginia bluebells, Dutchman's breeches, woodland phlox, bloodroot, shooting star. They're there and you can buy them.
Yeah.
So,
you know, we didn't mention earlier, too, is a lot of these plants propagate relatively easily from seed. And so that's always an option, too. And you don't necessarily have to start them indoors and transplant them outside. You can simply broadcast the seed and see what comes up. It's usually a little less expensive and maybe a little bit less work, although not as precise, maybe. But many of these plants, like Virginia bluebell, they propagate easily from seed. And so buying seed in and doing it that way is an option as well.
Now, if, of course, the bluebells, they propagate from seed, those seeds fall in June, and then they'll grow the next spring. If you wanted to plant them with seeds, how would you do it?
You would simply collect those seed capsules as they dry up and probably put them in an envelope and store them in a cool, dry place, and I'd probably sow them in the fall of the year, just kind of scatter them on the ground.
All right. And so if you wanted to buy a packet of seeds, if somebody was selling that, you'd want to sow those in the fall as well?
Probably in the fall.
Yeah. Then Mother Nature can do all the things that need to be done to get that seed to germinate instead of you trying to recreate it indoors.
All right. Next, let's go to Glenn on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Charity and Richard and Aaron. I've got two questions for you this morning. I've got a climbing rose that I planted last year, and it looks all browned out now. Now, I don't want it to grow to a real long height. Is it all right to cut that back? And how do you get the base of the climbing rose to shoot up more vines so it would fill out? That's my first question. And then the second question revolves around burning bush and burning tree. Do you ever trim those back, or do you just let them keep going and going and going and just like wild and don't do anything with them? Those are my two questions.
Okay, as far as the climbing rose, do you know if it blooms on just old wood or new growth?
Well, I've only had it in there for 1 year, so I don't know. It looks all browned out now, but obviously I'm trying to figure out what to do before it starts to, maybe the stems start to green up and so on and so forth.
Now, what I would do is go out there maybe this weekend or next week, and I would examine the plant, and those portions of the canes that are brown, those portions are dead.
Okay.
The canes, if they're alive, should be green in color. So if you go out there, and let's say the upper 2 or 3 feet is brown, the bottom foot or two is green, then you have definitely a lot of dead wood, and I would simply prune back to the dead wood.
Okay.
Now,
that was the question, whether cutting into that dead wood looking situation where you were, you know, sometimes you cut into something, all of a sudden you notice, wow, man, it's green inside.
Yeah, but
or it looks like it's alive.
Yeah, but the outside right here is the key. If that bark is brown, that tissue is dead, and so I would simply prune back to that green live tissue. Now, if this is a variety that blooms on old wood, it's not going to bloom this year. Okay. It will grow back, hopefully, and grow back very nicely, but it won't bloom this spring if it blooms on old wood. As far as the burning bush.
Smoke bush.
Oh, smoke bush.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, smoke bush.
Smoke tree and smoke bush.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you have the smoke bush. Oftentimes you have dead wood in that too. Now some people will cut them back to the ground each year in late winter. And they'll send up some new growth, and you'll have this very nice, attractive growth. Other people don't. They simply prune on any dead wood. So it's up to you as far as what you want to do on the smoke bush. Either cut it back to the ground completely or just cut out the dead.
And if in most smoke trees or smoke bushes, if you cut it to the ground, it won't flower. So you're sacrificing flower, but you're getting a really nice shape and a really nice foliage, which in some cultivars or in some situations is much preferred over the flower. So that you have to balance that too.
Okay, because I know smoke trees sometimes get up to like 15, yeah. 18
and
feet.
They can get kind of gangly looking with time, right. And that kind of thing. And so cutting it to the ground every spring or late winter means you have this really nice shaped plant and you have all these wonderful new leaves, but you won't get any blooms. So if the right. if the flowers are really important, that won't work.
Yeah, so this year I just have to go out there and kind of explore it, finger it around and figure out what's going, what's alive and what's dead then, mm-hmm. right?
Yep, if you don't want to trim the whole thing back.
Yep. Okay, all right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, Glenn. And next up, we've got Terry in Anita. Hi, Terry.
Yes, I have a kind of an invasive plant with the tops look similar to chives or a slender onion, and it just keeps on spreading by the roots, I think. I don't know what you'd call it, wild onion. It smells like onion, the leaves do. And
is it really green right now?
Yes, it overwintered. And, is there any way to kind of halt the advance of that?
Where is it growing?
Well, it's actually in my strawberries now.
Okay.
And in some bluegrass.
Okay. Well, it probably is a wild onion. And your best bet is probably digging it up, hand digging. And so this is going to require persistence and patience because this may be a chore that you do every spring over the next several years. It goes to seed, unfortunately, and comes up from seed. But it's a fairly common weed that we see in lawns and landscape areas, uh-huh. and it's very, very hard to get rid of. You have to be very persistent. Herbicides are not a very good option, so it's basically hand digging where you can.
And when you dig, you'll find it has little bulbs on it. So you want to make sure you get every one of those little bulbs out of the ground. I have a lot of this in my garden, and I usually spend a couple hours every spring going around digging up as much of it as I can, pulling all of it out and getting rid of it, because that bulb in particular is one of the, makes it so tenacious to try to get rid of. So making sure that you get as much of it as you can, and you're going to repeat this over and over again for a little while.
Well, I feel more comfortable now that others are in the same boat.
Yeah.
But now, some things, if you spread an old carpet over, like, quack grass, it will smother or kill it. Will that do the same thing with the underground bulbs of that?
Yeah, you know, it will probably help stress it out. But one of the things that makes this so hard is it has that bulb to come back from. And so even if you smother out the top growth, it could lay there for quite a while and still come back from that bulb. So smothering it doesn't always work as well as we might hope. The good news is they usually grow in clumps. So you can get in there with a trowel and you can just pull that whole clump out of the ground and just get rid of it. And that can go a really long way to helping you with that, where the herbicides and smothering may not be as effective for this plant in particular.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. Yep. I'll attack it.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call, Terry. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Susan is up next in Audubon. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about a tree pussy willow. My mom has one growing on the southeast side of her house, and it's not very attractive. The branches are just going every which way, but many of them grow to the north. And I'm wondering, what is the best time to prune that, and do you have any tips on pruning it?
Well, you can prune them back very severely. That's one thing that they tolerate quite well, so you could prune them right now if you wish.
Okay, even a tree pussy willow can.
Yes,
be.
You can.
This is one with a trunk. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Okay.
You can still prune them back very severely.
Okay.
My neighbor has one, and he would go out there basically in the spring early and prune it back severely. He would take some of the branches indoors and force the branches indoors, and that's what he did. So.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. I will work on that maybe this weekend.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Thanks a lot for your call, Susan. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Here's a question from another Susan, this one in Jewel. I noticed this morning that my tea rose bush stems are dark brown at the top of very green stems. Mm-hmm. Should I trim the dark part off?
Yep, absolutely. Just as Richard was mentioning before, there's some dieback. Most roses will have dieback in a typical winter. The stuff that's brown on top is dead. You can always remove something dead, and now would be a good time to do that.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer more questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Richard Giron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. They are here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to get through a few of our email questions right now. This one's from Lori. She says, I live in Ankeny, and the rabbits eat most of what I plant. They're building behind me, so I think that might help. I have a fence around my yard, but they just run under it. What can I plant or what can I do so they don't eat everything?
Well, basically probably finer fencing with smaller holes. You can use chicken wire fencing. I like hardware cloth, but if they're feeding on, let's say, things in the vegetable garden, maybe chicken wire fencing around the entire garden. If they're feeding on certain trees and shrubs, then I would use a hardware cloth where they simply cannot reach the plants.
Rabbits are a huge issue for us at Ryman Gardens. We have a very large population of rabbits, and we have to fence everything. We find that they do like vegetables and fruits, and they do like things in the rose family a little bit more than maybe some other things, but they will. I mean, I was just out in the garden this morning, and they had completely decimated a mugo pine over the winter. So they're... Fencing and good fencing is going to be probably your best bet.
All right. Let's do another email question. This one's from Stan. He says, I have daffodils in the yard, many of which no longer bloom. They're in the shade much of the day. If I dig them up and move them into the sun after the blooming season is over, will they start blooming again? They've been in the ground lots of years before I moved into this house.
Yes, they should. So the key there would be they're probably not getting enough sun. The key would be letting them die back naturally. So probably sometime around mid-June, go out there and dig them up. And at that point, you have two options. One is to replant immediately in a sunnier spot or let the bulbs dry for maybe a week or two and then put them in a mesh bag and then store them in a cool, dry place until fall and then plant them in the fall. But they may not bloom next spring because their performance is based on this year, okay? And this year they're not getting enough sun, so they may not bloom next spring, but hopefully the following spring they will.
All right, and here is a question from Mike in Milo. I have a wet area in my yard around the septic tile bed area, too wet to mow in the spring. I'd like to mix in wildflowers with the hard-to-maintain grasses growing in the area. What do you recommend?
What you might want to do possibly is go online. There are some companies, some regional companies that specialize in wildflower seed. And oftentimes they have seed mixes based on the environment. So you can buy a seed mix meant for a dry, sunny location. Or you can buy a seed mix meant for a very wet location. And so that might be the best way of doing it.
All right. Here's a question from Marlene. When do you take the mulch off of roses? I usually mound soil and leaves around mine in the fall. They have leaf buds already.
Yep. We did ours at Ryman Gardens this week. So anytime now you could remove it. And in particular, the soil, it may be a multi-day process because depending on how much was there, you may have to remove, say, all the leaf or straw or whatever you put over it and then wait for the soil to thaw out and then remove the soil. Or it has been fairly warm, especially in certain parts of the state, so the whole thing may be ready to remove. But you could do it anytime now.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. You know, they were talking a little bit earlier, you guys, about alternate ground cover, that sort of thing. And I've been trying to grow moss. I'm having, you know, not necessarily the best luck. But in, you know, looking for my mistakes online, I noticed that people are trying to grow that as something as an alternate to grass. Is this something that can be done in this part of the country? Could we be growing moss on our yards?
Well, maybe, but it needs precise environmental conditions. Typically, they do best in a shady, damp, moist location. And
right.
I have seen moss gardens, and they are actually high maintenance because during dry weather, you have to water them. And then any plant that comes up in the moss, like even grass, is considered a weed. And so you have to kind of go out there and pull it up. So you can try doing that, but I think it's best for maybe a small area, just kind of for fun.
Mm-hmm. Moss garden in the Midwest is an uphill battle for sure. Not impossible. And as soon as I say that, there will be people who say they have moss everywhere and they don't want it, and the people who want moss can't grow it. It's kind of one of those things sometimes, too.
But usually July and August are the tricky months
yeah.
where it gets very, very hot, usually and dry. So that's not what moss likes.
Sounds like a challenge.
All right. Well, good luck with it, Jim.
All right. Thank
yep.
you.
Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. We've got Daryl on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Daryl.
Hello, Charity.
Hi.
Richard and Aaron. Hey, I'm standing in my kitchen. I'm looking out at my hellebores, who are in full bloom. Crocuses are in full bloom. I have all sorts of stuff coming up. My shade garden, I've got six maple trees on the south side of my house. and so this is a great garden.
Nice.
Yeah, I would say things are maybe 2 weeks ahead of schedule, maybe 3 weeks. So we're seeing things advance very quickly this spring.
Yep, yep. I mean, the crocuses came up and bloomed immediately after I uncovered them. Several of us in the neighborhood leave the leaves on until it's time to, you know, spring. My question is about blackberries, actually, because I have a patch of blackberries, 2 by 10, I think, in a somewhat raised bed. They're starting to leaf out, and I need to do some pruning back there, and I need some advice.
Well, I would do it this weekend if you can. It's not too late. I would do it as soon as you can. And basically, I would prune out just the dead wood. Do you know what type of blackberry they are?
No, actually, that started out to be my late wife's project,
okay.
And I inherited it. But they are prolific,
okay.
And they spread all over the place, and they snag me when I'm mowing and all of that sort of stuff. But last year. The rabbits helped me. They cut back a whole bunch. But this year, the rabbits left it alone. So now I have to figure out, you know, what do I pull out? I don't think there's anything dead in there after this winter.
Well, my first thing would be I would go out there and look them over very carefully. And if there is any dead wood, prune that out first. And then if there's very little dead wood in the patch, I'd be inclined to remove the smaller, thinner canes because they won't produce that much anyway. I would leave the larger, fatter canes, so maybe do some thinning and then go from there.
All right, Daryl, good luck with that project. Next, let's talk to Rena in Des Moines. Hi, Rena.
Hi, good morning. I have a forsythia bush that's quite old. My lawn service, I asked them to trim it, and unfortunately they cut it clear to the ground. Is this going to die? Is it going to grow back? I'm seeing no growth on it.
It will grow back. It may take
a
few weeks.
Is this a good thing they did?
Well, I wouldn't say good, but it will come back. They're very tenacious plants. You may not see growth for another 2 or 3 weeks, but eventually you will see some new growth. And I'm going to guess by the end of summer, those new shoots might be 3 to 4 feet tall in length. They'll grow back very quickly.
Okay. Will the old stump or what he's cut off rot away, or will the growth just come out of that?
It'll probably come out from the base of that older stem or shoot, yes.
Okay, because it was, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 feet across. So it's a good old bush.
Right, right. Actually, when you have an older shrub, it is actually kind of a good idea to rejuvenate that plant. And one way to do that is to cut it back near ground level. So actually, it's not a bad thing to do periodically.
Okay, well, I appreciate your advice, and I missed my yellow blossoms, but I'll get them again.
Yep. Rena, thanks a lot for your call. We've got another question very similar about a forsythia from Lynn and Victor. She says, I have an old forsythia bush that doesn't bloom much anymore. Will a severe pruning, cutting it all back to the ground, kill it or rejuvenate it? So now we know it would rejuvenate it, but is that the best plan?
I think it is if it's an older plant. They do get eventually quite old and quite woody, and they're just not as vigorous as they once were. And one way is to go out there and remove a few of the shoots and do this over maybe 2 or 3 years. The other approach is more dramatic, where we simply cut it back to the ground and we basically rejuvenate the plant. And once we have a younger plant, typically they bloom much better.
Okay, so she can cut it back to the ground, or she could make it a more gradual process, but
right.
She doesn't need to plant a new one.
She doesn't have to. Now, what she can do if she wants, those branches root very easily. And so they could prune off maybe 2 or 3 pencil size stems and just stick them in the ground, and they may grow, and they have new plants if they wish.
All right. Here's a question from Jay in Norwalk. In my backyard, I have 50 feet of chain link fence that's 4 feet high. I'd like to plant flowers along that fence that attract bees and butterflies. It gets full sun all day long. Any suggestions?
Well, there's a lot of plants that would fit that bill. Most of the coneflowers would be a good addition for pollinators. Most things like bee balm and... butterfly weed, of course. Butterfly bush would be another one. Just about anything. I mean, I'm glad to hear it's in full sun, actually, because the
possibilities are endless.
The possibilities are much larger, and the insects like full sun too. So even though you may occasionally see butterflies or bees in shade on flowers that are growing in the shade, they much prefer the warmth of the sun. And so there you're going to have much more success that way, too.
All right. And here's a question from Susan. I have 2 9-bark shrubs that have fungus, and I've tried cutting it back to the ground, fungoil and copper fungicide to get rid of it. Nothing works. Suggestions?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the drawbacks on some of the newer varieties or cultivars. And you've tried both methods. Basically, one is cutting them back to the ground. Some people do that. The other would be applying fungicides. If neither one is working to your satisfaction, I would consider replacing it.
All right. She also asks, can I divide bleeding heart and transplant now?
Boy, I think it'd be very hard at this point to do that. They could try, but be very careful and make sure you keep it well-watered if you try it.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Peg is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Peg.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a linden tree in my front yard, and grass does not grow underneath it. I'm wondering what I can do to the soil to get grass to grow underneath that linden.
Well, there may not be much you can do. The area beneath the linden tree is a very difficult environment for the grass. The grass likes full sun, and the linden tends to have a very dense canopy, so very little sunlight gets through the canopy. The other problem is the linden has a lot of roots, and they're just below the surface. And so they end up getting most of the water and nutrients. So the grass is at a very distinct disadvantage. It can't compete very well with the big tree. So you may not be able to get grass to grow. If you want to try growing grass, make sure that you try the shade-tolerant grasses. Kentucky bluegrass prefers full sun, doesn't do well in the shade. So if you want to try grass again, then make sure you use a shady lawn mix that consists of the fine leaf fescues, like creeping red fescue, hard fescue. They're much more shade tolerant. If you try that and that still doesn't work, then I would look at ground covers as a possibility. Ground covers that like the shade that can compete with the roots of the linden tree. So it could be hostas, it could be Lily of the Valley, it could be a number of different ground covers.
All right, Peg, thanks a lot for your call. Evelyn is on the line now in Mount Vernon. Hi, Evelyn.
Yes, I'm calling from Mount Vernon, and I was talking to somebody that said she has her neighbor had a flowering crab or a flowering ornamental tree, and it was killing everything that was underneath it. Now, I was just listening to what was going on. Is it a shade thing, or does it put something off that she thinks that the little berries and things that fall off of it had something to do with killing, like barberry, potentilla, strawberries?
Yeah. No, it's a shade thing. It's a tough environment for plants that want more sun to be in. And so okay. It's not the soil. There's not a chemical being emitted or anything like that. It's just simply not enough light.
Okay. And then I bought it's like the flowering cherries that they have in Washington, D.C. I've had one in the ground for a few years, and it had some blooms on when I put it in, and I haven't had it bloom since then. So is that a soil thing? Does it not have enough nutrients or something?
I don't think it's that. What it may be, maybe the flower buds simply are not as hardy as they need to be for Iowa, for the Midwest. The flower buds typically are not quite as hardy as the leaf buds. And maybe that's an issue where the flower buds are forming in late summer, but they're not surviving the winter. And maybe that's the issue, possibly.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Evelyn. Here's a final question from Paul. I'm trying to be wise with herbicides, but I'm having trouble with garlic mustard. I've pulled bushels of the plant in all stages, bagged and burned. Trying to get ahead of spring growth is beyond my pulling capacity. What can I do? I know that's something a lot of people are struggling with.
It's extremely hard.
Yeah.
Where you have a large area, pulling would be a good way of doing it. You have to get it before it goes to seed, obviously, and destroy it that way.
Have a party? Invite a lot of people over?
Yes. A big party.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Paul. Thanks a lot for your message. And Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron. Aaron Stile, thank you.
It's been great talking with you.
Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. And, of course, we will be back again with Horticulture Day next Friday. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.